as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, new life, and welcome to Jonathan Markham and David Haken's discussion on Matthew 5, 1 to 12. We are starting the Sermon on the Mount. Get excited, people. This is awesome. This is Jesus' longest extended discourse in the book of Matthew. 3 chapters long, and it's amazing. And it starts in an amazing way with the Beatitudes. Pretty interesting sermon introduction.
Yeah, and there's so much in the Beatitudes, and which is why once again we've given you that first question, the close reading when you're looking for a light bulb. I mean, there are so many light bulbs in this passage.
How many Beatitudes are there again?
There are 8, 9. There are so many light bulbs. There's so many, and also there are so many things that challenge our lives. So produce arrows for application. So I hope that that part of your discussion is really rich this week. But our second question actually addresses what David has just said, that this is a really surprising sermon introduction. The Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5 to 7 is Jesus' first and largest public address to Israel. Their king has arrived. The kingdom is at the doorstep. But instead of triumph, Jesus preaches tears. Why should Jesus use negative words like poverty, mourning, hunger and thirst, persecution, and words that are typically associated with weakness like meekness, mercifulness, peacemaking, to describe his kingdom's blessings? What is Jesus teaching his disciples they can expect in this world, and what is expected of them?
That was well read. Yeah, this question addresses, I think, a series of reversals that Jesus is laying the groundwork with at the very beginning of his sermon here. I think that just in general, Jesus is teaching, you can see kind of a reversal in the area of ethics and of experience. So what can you expect to experience as someone who's part of the amazing messianic kingdom of Christ? Oh, it's going to be victory. It's going to be amazing. We're going to be those people who will lead the world towards change and moral revolution and all these things. And yet Jesus speaks of persecution and other signs of our experience as Christians not being received in the way that maybe these first century Jews thought it would be received. And then also a reversal in Christian ethics. Now, what did Jesus tell us? He said that even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. And he calls us to do the same. The last will be first. The first will be last. The Gentiles lord it over you, but it shall not be like that among you. Instead, the person who is a servant will be the highest. So this kind of reversal of Christian ethics, I think he's laying the groundwork here early in the Beatitudes. And I think there can be some fruitful discussion thinking about what it means to be a part of this kind of kingdom.
Right. And this is why this is the kingdom of God is so often referred to as the upside down kingdom, that everything that the world expects, God flips on its head. And we see this very clearly expressed in these Beatitudes. The third question is, the plans that I have for you. Are the kingdom blessings attached to the kingdom norms in present tense, is, or in future tense, will be? Should we expect the full fulfillment of these blessings in this life or in the life to come? What is it like to be a people characterized by waiting? Describe both the frustration and the hope. What is one source of pain in your life that you think only eternity will heal?
Yeah, that's kind of heavy, isn't it? Yeah, so just to take us back to the structure of the Beatitudes. There's 9 of them. And the first 8 all kind of look similar, and then the last one, 9th, is kind of long. And of the 8, it begins with this promise, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, and it ends with the same thing, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. But notice the word is there. In between the is's are a whole bunch of shall be's, future-oriented. So it seems that at least to some degree, a lot of these promised blessings await the full fulfillment, full arrival of Jesus' kingdom. So we're looking into some of that and kind of hoping to wrestle with this concept of they who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. We love this idea of renewing strength, but what does it really mean to wait for the Lord
right.
for that to happen?
And it's clear that that the kingdom is both a now and then, and will and it's a it is now and it will be, because you know and we see some of those things that God promises so clearly will ultimately happen, but it's very clear to us that they're not happening right now, or they're certainly not fully happening right now.
Right, right.
Some of them are happening. Some of them we experience a little bit of, but many of them we only experience partially until we see Jesus.
It's a good thing to hunger after righteousness. It's an even better thing to be fully righteous,
yes.
and to be in a world that is fully righteous. And that's where we're headed, guys. Isn't that great?
And some of the things, of course, when you look at persecution, we can expect persecution. And, of course, when we meet Jesus, that will not be there. So persecution will be eliminated. And, of course, mourning will be eliminated.
Right.
He will wipe away every tear. So although we look at those things as things that we experience, and we experience some comfort now, they will be eliminated in the when we go to be with Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Kingdom blessing.
Now the last question is asks us to look a bit more personally at the Beatitudes and to read them prayerfully, read them through one more time, replacing "blessed are" with "I am." Now grammatically, that sometimes is a little strange, but
right, you got to work with it.
Yeah, so replace "blessed are" with "I am." Does this help to identify one of the attitudes that the Lord might want to wish to transform further in our lives? Paul taught that we are to renew our minds. What pattern of thought might you seek to correct this week through the power of the Spirit in order that to be better conformed to this beatitude?
It's kind of a favorite trick of preachers occasionally to take that beautiful love poem in 1 Corinthians 13, "Love is patient, love is kind," and to ask the congregation to replace their name with "love is." So say something like, "David is kind, David does not envy, David does not boast, David is not arrogant," in a way to make you see, oh shoot, David is arrogant, oh my gosh, all right, Lord, please help me, help me change this area. And I think that this question is a attempting the same thing.
Yes, I mean it's recognizing as we're going to see that when Jesus talks about being blessed, he's talking about what comes to us as we accept Christ in our lives, and that the consequence of really understanding that blessing, really understanding what Jesus has done for us, will produce certain things in our lives. Like, for instance, we will recognize our poverty of spirit. We will recognize how much we need him. And yes, it's true that sometimes we forget how much we need him. And the Lord needs to certainly for me, he needs to constantly rework in my mind, this is how desperately you need Jesus, Jonathan. And so I need week by week, moment by moment, to have that thinking process that recognizes how amazing what God has done for me is, and how much I need him. Mm. And so I think each of these Beatitudes offers us a way of that God is going to transform our minds. And that's his work in us, which is why the end of the question says that might be transformed by the power of the Spirit.
Right, right. I think of the reference in 1 John that says we love because he first loved
right.
us. It's a response to what's already been done.
And so much of what we, it is so easy to shift our thinking into a place where we think, I need to do these things in order that God might love me or God might forgive me. It's so easy because that is so natural in a human being's method, thought process. Whereas over and over again, we have to remind ourselves, no, all of those things have already been done. And because they've already been done when we didn't deserve them, we didn't do anything for them, we didn't in any way make them happen, our response of overflowing devotion to our Father in heaven is the only appropriate way to respond.
Yeah, and I think that you're just describing Pauline ethics, because what Paul does, everyone on the books behind us will say, Paul moves from the indicative to the imperative. He moves from what is true to what you should do about it. He always starts with what is true. So like this comes out so clearly in 1 Corinthians 6, where he's talking about, well, there's several different ways in which he utilizes this methodology, but for those Christians in the Corinthian church who will sue another one of their Christian brothers, they'll sue him for some reason, Paul says, do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world is to be judged by you, are you incompetent to try these trivial cases, and yet you're taking this case before a secular court? No, don't you realize what's true about yourself? You are positionally set to rule the new heavens and the new earth alongside Christ. Therefore, act that way in the present.
Well, we really hope that you're going to enjoy these questions. This is the beginning of this, as David's already said, the beginning of this wonderful sermon, this wonderful teaching, and Jesus is sort of pouring out for his disciples. And I think you're going to find that as we that these Beatitudes actually form they're an introduction to the sermon, because they're become a foundation to the sermon. So I hope you enjoy your discussions.
Learn them and learn them well. You guys are going to have a fun time. See you next week.
As I wait.